From the studios of 96.3 FM, Freak Radio in Santa Cruz, California, you're listening to the Weekly Freak Show. Please stay tuned for contact information at the end of this half-hour broadcast. You just heard Bob the Singing Bass Player with this week's Spotlight Sound. Animals Are People Too, from his latest release. Is this the greatest country in the world or what? Derek St. Pierre is an attorney with the National Lawyers Guild. He frequently attends protests as a legal observer and acts as a liaison between protesters and police. He was outside San Francisco's Neiman Marcus store for Saturday's demonstration. He spoke with Freak Radio's Old Lady Scar Arms and begins with his version of events.
Arrived there around 11:30. The protest was scheduled to start at noon, and when I arrived there, there's already 25 to 30 police officers on site, a very large, kind of police presence with the sheriff's bus in order to take away protesters. And they had established essentially a police line around the front door, and it looks very strange when kind of customers are walking by. There's no protest whatsoever, and you just have like an inordinate number of police officers on in a corner. They're wondering what's going on. Well, the protest arrived shortly after, and kind of answered all those questions for them. And what happened when the protest arrived? They arrived marching up Stockton Street and came right to the corner where Neiman Marcus is, and with banners and signs and everything else, leaflets, and started addressing the crowds that were there. And roughly 20, 25 people locked down in front of Neiman Marcus, with lock boxes around their arms, attached to each other, and laying down on the sidewalk, essentially making it impossible for anybody to enter the store unless they walked around or over the protesters, because they were in that region right in front of the door. There were also six people or so who joined them that weren't locked in lock boxes, but were sitting down with them on the sidewalk. And what happened at that same time is a group of six or so blocked the second entrance and lay down on the sidewalk in the vicinity in front of it. And it took roughly 15, 20 minutes, maybe even half an hour, but the people who weren't locked down in front of the front entrance were arrested. First couple that were arrested, were rather uneventful, but the police did start applying pain compliance techniques and pain holds to some of the other people they were arresting to try to get them to go peacefully with them, and to try to get them to basically do whatever the police were saying.
Was this an appropriate use of force? Were these people resisting? Were they not moving peacefully?
There was no active resistance by some of these people. One or two of them were passively resisting in the sense that they just completely lying limp and weren't agreeing to go with the police, but by no means were they making any actions whatsoever towards the police. I mean, the best way to describe it is they were laying there limp. Police officers were then using pain to try to convince them to walk on their own momentum so they wouldn't have to carry him away. I think the police defend and justify that use of pain as a, coercion technique. I personally don't agree with it. I think that if you're faced with that situation and you have enough police officers that have the strength to do it, you should just carry those people away and, go about it that way, as opposed to trying to injure and use pain compliance in order to get people to cooperate with you. So that's kind of what I saw there. And what they did in order to isolate the area and actually end up blocking all the doors is the police set up barricades around all the protesters, about the metal kind of about 3.5 feet high barricades that you are classically associated with the police.
So those were the first six arrests, those who were not actually physically locked down. Then there was something that happened. Another attorney was arrested?
Right, yeah. Alexander, who's another attorney, was down at the second entrance and standing next to one of the police barricades I was just describing. He was there kind of part of a large number of people that were bearing witness, and some people were leafleting and just providing support to the people that were locked down. At one point, the police decided to close the entire sidewalk on that side of the street in that area and sent two officers right towards the crowd to try to move them. They slowly started walking towards the crowd and pushing them back and telling them to move, not really giving most of the people a good opportunity to move, and continuing to advance forward. Al made the mistake, you know, of questioning the officers in the sense that, why are you doing this? What's going on? We have every right to be here. And, you know, and by saying the word mistake, I speak, you know, kind of very loosely. I guess he made the mistake of opening his mouth because after asking several times and not getting any answer from him, one of the police officers kind of broke through the line and tackled him, with the other officer following very quickly behind and jumping on top of him after they both hit the ground. Once Al was on the ground, he was face down. He was put into a chokehold by a police officer while the other officer had his knee in the middle of his back using a pain compliance technique on his wrist. And Al was very, you know, being choked. I watched him turn several shades of purple and trying to, you know, not kicking, not doing anything, trying to just breathe and trying to, you know, not pass out. He did seem to lose consciousness for a few seconds at the time, and I also, you know, saw him later where his face was bloody, a lot of blood coming out of his mouth, his nose was crooked, may have been broken, and he, after talking to him this morning, he woke up with a black eye as well.
So after Alexander was hauled away, then they began to move in on the protesters that were locked down, isn't that right?
That's correct. The protesters that were locked down were all laying in front of two separate entrances. And what the police opted to do after some time and some consultation, they brought in these dollies with four wheels on them. The best way I can describe it, it's like similar to what you would set an industrial trash can into, that that would hold four. It has four wheels on it, and it's essentially a flat rolling device, or something that you would use to move large furniture. They took one of those and placed it under each of the protesters on the sidewalk, lifting each person up one at a time, and then tried to roll them all as one group out of in front of the entrance. Well, it sounds like a pretty good idea if you can picture how these individuals are actually attached. They're attached with lock boxes, which are very heavy metal pipes around their arms, so that you cannot, you know, remove one person from the other. Well, in the process, they're dragging these lock boxes along, twisting and contorting people's arms, which is going to subsequently affect your wrists as well as your shoulder sockets. So there's a lot of people wincing in pain and being contorted into strange positions when the police were moving them. But that's, in fact, how they opted to deal with the situation, is to move them as a group away from the door. And they did this with not only the group in front of the second door, but ultimately with all the people in front of the first door as well.
So did you see anything there as an attorney that was illegal or brutal?
Illegal is hard to describe. Brutal, yeah. I mean, I saw people that were definitely being injured in the process. And I saw, you know, a variety of different situations that you could only describe as extremely painful. But unfortunately, the way our law works is they oftentimes give a lot of discretion to officers in trying to deal with situations. I don't know if you remember from a few years back the whole pepper spray thing, use of pepper spray on people locked down. This wasn't near as violent as that, but officers got away with using pepper spray on protesters that were, you know, nonviolent lockdown. So my faith and the ability of the courts to straighten this out is slim. But I did see stuff that easily qualified as injuring people and as brutal.
Well, is this part of a pattern? You've been to a lot of these protests, and have the police, what kind of brutality have they applied in the past?
In terms of the larger picture, this demonstration was actually much more mellow than a lot of the demonstrations that I've experienced here, especially in association with the animal liberation movement. There seems to be a lot of hostility held by the officers against, you know, the activists and protesters. Some of the other circumstances I've witnessed, you know, have included myself being arrested and beaten for observing a protester get pushed to the ground by a security guard. And when he tried to get the security guard arrested, the protester was in fact arrested. I tried to explain the situation to the police officers and found myself on the bottom of a pile of four police officers kicking and hitting me with a baton. And I've seen a number of situations that have resulted in injury of protesters where the police are just, you know, kind of overstepping their bounds and are turning a nonviolent situation into a very aggressive one.
Why do the police put Why are they so violent against nonviolent protesters that are protesting for animal liberation?
You know, that's a really hard question to answer. You know, I have a couple of different ideas on it. One of the reasons I'd like to put out there and let listeners make their own opinion on is the fact that Neiman Marcus hires these very same police officers when they're off duty to perform security at their store, including on the regular Sunday protests that happen by CAFT. You'll see 2 to 3SFPD police officers wearing their SFPD uniform, but they're on the payroll of Neiman Marcus at that time. You wouldn't really know that unless you had spent some time analyzing the situation and actually talking to or during the course of legal cases found out because of discovery that that's in fact the case. But that is very much the circumstances. A number of these officers are being paid off-duty by Neiman Marcus to provide security. So that really, you know, raises the question of, well, when they're being paid by the city, who's calling the shots? The same people that are calling the shots when they're, you know, working for Neiman Marcus or the city, and it should be the city, but I don't think it is. And then the second idea I'd like to put out there in terms of some of the brutality is anytime you start protesting or bringing up an area that questions, you know, kind of the fundamental lifestyle of the people involved, I think people tend to react very negatively and very harshly. And even though the protests here in this circumstance are over for and over an issue which I don't think even the superiors in the police department could afford to buy a fur coat, the issue of animal liberation very much questions, you know, kind of their fundamental thoughts, their fundamental belief systems, and the way they see the world. The idea that animals aren't the objects questions, you know, somebody's fundamental worldview. And when you're in that point, and people are questioning the way you relate to the rest of the world, oftentimes people react very harshly.
So was there any positive response from people coming by or people coming out of the store, into the store? Did anybody respond positively to?
There was a lot of overwhelming support from people walking by saying, well, I'm not going to go in there today because you guys are protesting till I'm not going to go into Neiman Marcus, you know, again until they stop selling fur. One of the highlights for me was just watching a woman walk out of Neiman Marcus, kind of see the whole situation and take it in, understand what it was about. Then she pulled her Neiman Marcus credit card out of her wallet, broke it right there in front of the whole crowd, and just threw it on the ground. You know, very symbolic, very simple act, but it's very empowering to watch somebody who's definitely, you know, supports the store to the point where they have a credit card, but they walked out and they made a choice there on the spot that's not what they're part of. So.
And that's all the time we have for this week's program. Thank you for listening. The Weekly Freak Show is produced live in the studios of 96.3 FM Freak Radio in Santa Cruz, California, and can also be heard in Dade City, Florida at 102.9 FM, in Berkeley, California at 104.1 FM, in Madison, Wisconsin at 87.9 FM, and on the World Wide Web at www.unbrokenchain.net and www.parumpradio.com. The Weekly Freak Show can be reached at P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. That's P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Or send email to frsc@microradio.net. That's frsc@microradio.net. And don't forget, you can always listen to the many fine shows on Freak Radio by pointing your browser to www.microradio.net/FRSC. That's www.microradio.net/FRSC. Our theme music was composed and performed by Neil Norman and his Cosmic Orchestra. For Old Lady Scar Arms, Max Boykoff, and everyone at Freak Radio, my name's the V-Man, and that's a wrap.